verses 4 and 5. As a great flood carries away a sleeping village, so death bears off the man who, possessed of longing, plucks only the flowers of existence. The destroyer brings under his sway the man who, possessed by longing, plucks only the flowers of existence and who is insatiable in sexual passions. So plucks only the flowers of existence. The flowers of existence are impermanent flowers, insubstantial flowers, flowers that wither and become ugly and foul-smelling. The flowers of existence is describing taking hold of things, basing our life, our security, our sense of meaning on things that will perish. They look bright and lovely and beautiful, but what will they give us in the end? What will they give us in the end? Death comes and it will feel as though everything has been swept away. There's a great poignancy in old age and an oncoming death. I've seen it where somebody knows that they're dying, and maybe it's kind of, you know, it's drawn out, and they're quite clear. At that time, you find out what you have really gained, what you've really achieved in this life, what, as it were, really yours, what's really of your heart. I remember being with my father towards the end of his life. My father was a very good man who I love very deeply. But you could see that there were times where he really wondered what he'd actually achieved. I mean, he'd actually achieved a lot because he did well as a father, a wonderful father and husband and all the rest of it. But you could see, in a way, the sort of doubt there at that time. But presumably there are other flowers to gather other than the flowers of existence. The blooms of the Dharma, the flowers of the Dharma. There's a lovely line that's used by a Buddhist master named Shantideva in a text called Entering the Path to Enlightenment, where he says, all other goodness, even goodness, loses its fruit. You know, even behaving quite well can lose its fruit because it's on an impermanent basis. But he says, that tree of the bodhicitta, the will to enlightenment, the first dawning of wisdom and compassion, that the tree of the bodhicitta begets and does not decay, it bears fruit perpetually. So if we can develop some insight into the nature of things and to develop some genuine love and compassion for others, there's going to be something that's always going to be producing, always going to be producing. The next verse, we have reference to the destroyer. The destroyer brings under his sway the man who possessed by longing, etc. The destroyer, Mara again, he's everywhere in the Dhammapada. The Buddha is really bringing it home. All right there?
Yeah.
Mara is the wrecker of the spiritual life. And here we don't just have the flowers of existence describe. We also have this phrase, insatiable in sexual passions. We need to talk a bit about this, being insatiable in sexual passions. It could sound as though the Buddha and the ancient Indian tradition are a bit heavy about sex and sexual passions. But you'd actually, when you read the old texts, there's no impression of kind of irrational guilt associated with sex and sexual activity. You get the impression, actually, of quite a healthy and unhung-up society when it comes to that department of life. It's worth pointing out, one of the Buddha's leading lay disciples was somebody called Amrapali. And Amrapali was a very wealthy and successful courtesan who was in the business of providing services to the wealthy men of Vaishali. And the Buddha, as far as I know, never ticked her off. And he always accepted invitations, you know, to go for a meal. oh dear. Not like that. To go for a meal with his monks. It's getting worse. You know what I mean. So it's quite an important point to mention. Of course, the Buddha and his monk disciples were celibate or brahmacharya. But their lay disciples weren't necessarily, well, obviously they weren't that. But sex, being overwhelmed by that passion, letting it lead you, dominate you, can completely wreck your spiritual life in all kinds of ways. And I'll leave you to reflect on that topic.